Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Got this intro on autopilot now. I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's been something like 150 episodes of this show. I don't know. And I don't even think about it anymore. Like some of these shows, I'm like, oh, Star Trek Picard. What is our show called? And what network is it on? Oh, it's a streaming service. I don't do any of that real-time calculation here. It's all just AMC. It's all just The Walking Dead. We're here to do a season 400 wrap-up? Season 400. Yep. Part B of a three-part season. Three-part final season. Aaron,
this is like something from Brazil. We just watched Brazil this week. It'll come out later. But like this is season 433 stroke B. Yeah.
Right. And it's got its own office and it shares a desk.
I had a stroke halfway through the last episode.
I watched that episode again last night in prep for this podcast, just to refresh my memory. So I'm clear on where we left things, but I don't have a ton to say that I didn't already say in the final episode. Aaron, what do we have to do today?
Let's talk about when we're coming back.
Sure.
I thought we would have...
we've decided
like
not to
we
cover
are coming back.
The third part of the final season. No.
We're going to fumble the ball and kick it through the end. Yeah, we're just going to kick it out of bounds right on the 1 yard line. So we don't have a date, right? We just did some looking.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like we have a date. It seems reasonable to expect us to come back into September.
October window.
Kind of time frame, but they also could shock us and release it in late summer.
Which I am only half joking on we decided not to come back because September-October window, I don't know if you're aware of this, is very crowded this year with some very high-profile shows such as Hot D and Loader. I don't know.
Loader.
House of the Dragon, Lord
Rop,
of the Rings.
Loader Rop, Rings of Power.
It's the shows.
It's a lot of pulp. And then we got the Walking Dead shambling there in the midst of the dragons and the.
We
the,
will make it over the finish
the rings.
Line. It's no doubt. Yeah. We're not gonna crap out again. You know, like a marathon runner making it 25.8 miles and keeling over.
I don't care how much the zombie subway tunnels flood, or how hard the hurricane blows of content. We're gonna get through this. So yeah, like we'll be back, you know, when The Walking Dead comes back. So be on the lookout for that because I, for one, am excited to see the last season. I am excited to see where they end up with this. I'm excited to see how shameless a launch pad they're going to be using this for the launching of the rest of their content, the rest of their imagine The Walking Dead empire that they're going to. Let me ask you this. Honest question. Mm-hmm. How well do you think the zombie ecosystem is going to work out for The Walking Dead? What are the odds in 5 years from now that there still will be active Walking Dead shows on AMC being developed?
5 years seems like a long time. Because that's assuming a 5 year run of a brand new show. I think you could have a good 3 years on the next show, you know, The World Beyond or whatever they're doing now. But 5 years is a long time. Here's what I think AMC's real strategy is AMC Plus and Shudder, right? Like they're pulling people into those services. You can get all the Walking Dead stuff on Shudder, I think. You can get it through AMC Plus. They're both owned by AMC. That's got to be their strategy, right? Because I just don't think these shows are viable on television and the streaming platforms that they're on. Like, did you go to Amazon and watch this if you're not a podcaster and pay like for the AMC subscription? I guess you do. I guess you have to.
I just wonder, like, what is the appetite for zombie stuff? Because I guess I'm not. It when I see a zombie thing come out, my first reaction is, oh god, another zombie thing. It's more of huh, because most of the time when I see zombie stuff come out, it's got like a twist to it. It's like, oh, this is a zombie series set in feudal Korea. Oh, this is a zombie set in modern Korea. This is a this is a zombie thing by Zack Snyder. It's going to be, you know, a fun heist Vegas film. It's not like I'm like, oh, God, zombies. But I feel like the zombie craze that started in early aughts is definitely crested, early to mid aughts, and is receding. And I just wonder like what they, but I guess, and that's the thing, is in today's fragmented market, keeping a core of 1 million, 2 million fans engaged with something, and especially since that they're weaving all this together, they're all telling, you know, more zombie lore and more zombie secrets. Maybe that's a solid format for, that's a solid, mm-hmm. I mean, it got to be at least as solid as like Star Trek, whatever, Disco, right?
Oh yeah.
On Paramount Plus.
No, I think they have a franchise at least as popular as that. Whether it's on I don't know. Cause it felt like Star Trek there for a while was on the come up, and now this thing feels like it's running into the ground, but maybe that's just on television. Maybe their streaming numbers are going pretty well. Maybe they're happy with the new subscriber count they've got.
Well, we'll be back when we've had some people asking questions like, are you guys going to cover any of that? We are not planning on doing any of the spinoffs or any, no. You know, like jumping on to Fear the Walking Dead for its final or The World Beyond or anything like that. I'm not committing to that because, you know, if the Negan Maggie show turns out to be fire and everybody says it's some subversive farce that's really interesting, like I could get into something like that. I'm never going to say never, but I'm not really interested in getting to know, because that's the thing, like the reason I'm in thus far at The Walking Dead is because I like a lot of the characters still and would like to see what they end up with it. I would be interested in seeing some first run Bald movies if they get the Rick, I mean, that's almost a lock. That if they make this Rick movie and they release it, that we would see it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I don't know. We'll have to see. We got a lot of feedback. That's what the bulk of this episode is going to be about. WatchingDead@BaldMove.com, of course, is where you send this in. Hold it all for the next couple of months because we're going to go on Walking Dead hiatus. Also, I guess this is now the time to say, if you are, you know, this is one of our longest running shows. It is our longest running show.
It's got to be.
And if you're like, oh, what am I going to do with myself? The Walking Dead's going away. We've got so much stuff coming out this summer.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to start Better Call Saul, another AMC hit. Jim's going to be covering that with Alexis. We've got We Own This City, David Simon and George Pelicanos, the maestros behind The Wire and The Deuce, Show Me a Hero, Tremé, Plot Against America are doing We Own This City. We're about to start that next week or the week after next. We've got For All Mankind, a great new Apple Plus show that's going to be coming back in June. We got The Boys that are coming back in June, Amazon Prime show. And then this fall, a lot, as we mentioned, we got Rings of Power, the House of the Dragon, just tons of stuff. We have regularly scheduled movies, first run movies, like all the big Marvel stuff coming out. We're about to do The Northman next week. So there's plenty of Bald Move content talking about television and movies. You don't have to feel bereft if you're only a Walking Dead fan. There's tons of other stuff that you can shamble after us. But let's get to the feedback. Allie's up first. Where the fuck is the professor? He went to Oceanside. Aren't his friends worried? Is it weird that no one is commenting on this? Jim, what's going on with the professor?
The professor has eloped with Yumiko, and they are starting their own show. It's going to be called The Professor and Me, and it's a law show, I think. It's going to be, yeah, a law show. Zombie law.
He's starting like that Norman Reedus ride. It's going to be a like a travelogue food show called Fantastic Feasts and How I Eat Them.
And he is the motorcycle.
Because I think the real answer is he's stuck on another ill-fated franchise that people feel ambivalent about, and it's struggling to find a shrinking audience. The Fantastic Beasts, like he's been filming and promoting that. That's going to be coming out here pretty soon. So
I mean, that's the real answer for him. But my biggest question is, in an episode where like you're the finale episode, you're digging into the Pamela Milton stuff, and you don't even think about bringing Yumiko back. Where is she? That's who I want to know about. Like, she's been absent.
Her brother's part of the resistance.
Right. Is she doing something super high profile, Eleanor Matsura, that I don't know about? Is she getting the Marvel stuff? I don't know.
All right. I don't know. I feel like it's, I think it's just so low rent that you cannot get this guy for a 30-second scene. Like, all he needed to be is in that roundup sequence at Oceanside, and we would be like, well, I don't know where the fuck he's been, but he's been in Oceanside, and Oceanside hasn't been a big part of the plot. But it's acknowledging, I don't know, would you say he was a, I don't know if he's a fan favorite, because I don't have my fingers on the pulse that hard, but he was one of my favorites. I really liked the professor.
I did too. And I thought to me, the bigger thing is Yumiko, though. We've been in Commonwealth the entire time. We had a story
She's
set
highly,
up with her.
Highly
and then
placed
gone.
In the State Department. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty annoyed.
Yeah, she should know. Like, and what does the State Department look like? Like, that's in the United States, that's the department that deals with foreign policy. Wouldn't she be intimately involved in, like, the procedures for bringing in these new communities and probably...
You would think so.
The helicopter people and all the other kind of factions, and we're getting none of that. It's because she's being spun off. The Yumiko show.
Sure.
Moving on to Nicole B says, I have to take a moment to roast The Walking Dead for the amount of time this episode crossed over into becoming a bad tour of General Hospital /ER. For a show that can barely manage zombie tropes, they had no business trying to make tension from a hospital caper of stealing supplies, the mix of dramatic character moments cut short by patient is crashing, and the intense music and over close-ups of the operating table, surrounded by panicked staff and a calm, wavy-haired doctor saving the day. What are the chances the writers were struggling with filming an hour of TV and someone piped up, you know, I used to intern for Grey's Anatomy. They can't kill half the cast, and the other half is not available for shooting, so I wonder how much of the script is copy and pasted from whatever is saved from the writer's Google Docs. Wouldn't it make more sense to phone a Yumiko over the phone with Carol when Doctor and Ezekiel were in handcuffs? I bet the actor is off doing something better for more money. You know, that's the thing, is like every single time we have these questions about where is a character, where is it, it's almost always, well, we've got this big ensemble cast that they don't know what to do anything with, and they're probably off doing other things.
Well, yeah. And it must be hard to hang on to talent in the final season of a show, right? Like, they know this train is stopping. They need to hop onto another train, go in a different direction, otherwise they're going to dead end.
And you're going to be like, Professor, you better be on the fucking set for 30 minutes of shooting. And he's like, or what?
Or
what if I just stay in England and hang out with Harry Potter? You know, you going to cut me next season? Oh, no. Nicole says, plot hole of the week. What does Daryl do with his Stormtrooper uniform when he goes casual Friday 3 times a day? That's a good question. That's a bulky outfit.
Yeah.
Is he just like a 3-year-old? He just trails it all over the place, and, you know, Hornsby's there picking up after him, and God damn it, Daryl, get back in uniform. It's like, my kid was always taking his shoes and socks off. In the middle of February with snow on the ground, he's like, as soon as we get in the car and I put him in the car seat when he's a little kid, he'd whip those shoes and socks off. And I'm like, why are you doing this? You're going to have to put them right back on in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, keep up the feral Daryls for me. Now! That's a weak one. That was more of a squeak. That's a feral puppy, Daryl.
This is a squeaker, for sure.
I'll keep him up as long as he keeps being feral, so. Dave A says, it's actually pretty easy to spot Daryl when he's walking around in an armor and a crowd of troopers, even when he's wearing his helmet, because unlike most of the stormtroopers, he does not wear a white armor ring around his neck. And he supplied plenty of visual evidence for this. Daryl doesn't wear his gorget, I think is what you call that.
Why?
I'm not sure.
Can pull the helmet off quicker, or?
Dave explains, I'm not sure if this makes him easier to spot for the audience or the film crew. For in-universe purposes, not wearing a collar seems like a tactical disadvantage because it leaves your neck much more vulnerable. But Daryl kicks ass with no armor, so why be uncomfortable, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, armor's always been like a trade-off between protection and comfort and speed and maneuverability. So maybe he's just more comfortable without that's the equivalent of wearing a tie. He'll wear your goddamn suit. He's not going to have that restrictive thing on your neck, you know?
Yeah, it's hilarious too, because watching that final episode again, you see the guy who just got attacked in the hallway by a walker, and the walker is like biting at his face, but luckily he has a helmet on. It would have taken like 6 bites out of the dude. The immediate thing he does immediately after that, he rips his helmet off and doesn't wear it again for the entire episode.
Yep.
Dumbass. Did you not realize that thing just saved your life? So, I don't know. It's a bad idea, Daryl.
I mean, that's super realistic. Like, it's, you know, I've heard tell that it's like somewhat of a struggle on the battlefield to keep your soldiers, you know, always wearing their steel plates and their hats. And it's 118 degrees outside today. And oh my God. We haven't been shot by an insurgent for 60 days, but today's going to be the day you get one. And it's like, or construction sites, you know, trying to get people to follow OSHA regulations when it's literally saving their lives. Like, us humans, we're not the brightest, you know?
Yeah, but it's like sticking your head up from one of the trenches in World War One, taking a glancing bullet off your helmet, and then going, don't need this thing.
Right, yeah.
No,
if I wasn't wearing the helmet, I wouldn't even have felt it. It had gone over my head.
Sure.
Josh from Pennsylvania says, as an AMC Plus viewer, I wanted to write in about the last episode. Lance is a serious psychopath. At this point in the story, it's hard to prove just how crazy he is, but mark my words, there's some serious shit coming. I have a few predictions and I've read a few things, like concentration camps, slavery, executions. Lance is growing his own empire with Oceanside, Hilltop, and Alexandria. I wonder if this will be like he's a Christopher Columbus type.
Okay.
You know, he's like, he's got a wealthy benefactor that wants him to make something from nothing. He's going to go and use a bunch of raw materials from these new worlds, and it's going to turn into slavery and plantations and coffee for the whole world.
When you say you've read a few things, do you mean the history books, or do you mean you know some things about episodes coming up, or like, is he in the comics? I don't even know.
That's the thing. I am very curious to see this, because this is out of the comics, at least the Stormtrooper part of it is, and I'm wondering how much of this commentary on like late stage capitalism, things like that, were baked into the comic book. How much of this was, well, it's roughly the Commonwealth with a little bit of modern, the last 3 or 4 years injected into it. I don't know.
Yeah.
There was a piece of feedback last week that predicted Milton is unaware or oblivious to the fact that so many people are treated unfairly. The show has proven that she knows and proven that she doesn't care. She would rather allocate funding to ritzy parties than to those less fortunate. Yeah, definitely this week they came down on that.
Yeah, I could still see her like just not understanding that what she's really doing there, you know, like.
Well, that's what he said. Maybe that's just the way she is. Yeah. She's a white collar, good for nothing Nimrod who sits at her desk and contemplates what kind of wine to drink at $50,000 parties. But either way, she's in the wrong. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't be that out of touch with your people when your people are going out and fighting zombies, you know? At the end of the day, I've been enjoying the season quite a bit more than anyone else, it seems. I have two requests for the last 8 episodes. I want deaths. I want all the spinoffs, fake outs. They kill off Carol, Maggie dies, and Negan sacrifices himself heroically to keep Herschel alive. I just want more heart-pounding, gut-wrenching deaths, and I think everyone else does too. And that's the key. Like, there's not a lot of heart-pounding they can get out of the people that I know are safe, quote-unquote, to kill.
Yeah. Unless they're not
like,
safe.
Who we got?
It would be...
Eugene?
Eugene could die, certainly.
But I'd laugh!
Right.
Rosita, laugh. Gabriel, I guess
Aaron.
Gabriel and Aaron. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like Aaron a lot. It's not just the Aaron solidarity. I think he's a cool character. He's always been a good guy.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I feel like it's a fool's errand to hold out hope for this all being a fake out. Like, I don't think they're faking anybody out. I think they're teasing people, trying to get them to watch their next shows. But like, if it were a fake out, and you just like kill all of the characters who supposedly had spinoff shows coming in like one scene, that would get people talking for sure.
Killing Judith off would piss me off. That would get a rise out of me for sure. I don't know if they got it in them to kill a kid like that. I mean, they've certainly killed children in the show before. I mean, look at the flowers, but finally, Rick. I want him back. I seriously want Rick back on for at least one last episode or two. I don't see how else they could end this show on a high note. I think the odds are better than 50% that Rick is, if not in the final episode, a post-credit scene.
Yeah.
And it would be pretty cool to bookend that with like him waking up in a hospital in the new regime, you know, like a nightgown. And
just like the first. season.
Yeah, like he's a room, he's alone in a room, and he gets out, and he pokes his head out, and instead of zombies, it's like military thugs that are like pushing him back. I think that could be cool, and because like it's in their best interest to remind people why they still have this haggard, poor, huddled mass following the last steps of this show, to remind them that, oh yeah, your biggest hero is still alive in this universe, and we've got a three film trilogy that we're planning for him.
Oh yeah,
so I think that
needs to happen. If they're smart, they'll do it for sure.
I think there's a good chance we'll see Rick in some form, maybe even just a post-credit scene.
And maybe that's why
they'd be kind of dumb not to.
Yeah, maybe that's why they're comfortable like releasing all this information about like, oh, these characters can't die because they got spinoffs coming. They're saving like that big announcement of Rick in the movies for the end of this season.
If you can't kill people, bring in Rick, Michonne, and Heath back. That's what would really get people talking, right?
Oh, no. yeah, but maybe not for the right reasons with Heath.
All right, John from Chi-Town says, when we first saw the Commonwealth Stormtroopers, they looked like a well-trained elite army, but this season has shown they're actually red shirts. Mm-hmm. Spoilers, the followings are from observations of the last episode. We're all good.
Except for the one in the red armor, who's definitely not a red shirt.
He is not.
Yeah.
He's the white shirt. I thought it would have been better if they'd played more into the moment Daryl kills Leah. They were intimate together, and it's rare in the show to have someone kill a person they were previously intimate with, like Carol and her husband, Negan and Alpha. I said that, but I don't think we spent enough time on it. Like, yeah, it was a bit of an anticlimactic moment to have Daryl kill Leah and be apparently fine with it.
Yeah, I feel like they said everything they needed to say. They got it all out on the rooftop in Shit Town or whatever that was.
And I guess like that's I guess I like him just without hesitation coming in there and shooting her rather than, you know, build up some 30 second come on Lee now right. The go back and forth with that and family and your family and my family and our
again.
Yeah. But it was weird. I don't understand Lance's ploy of hanging banners at Hilltop in Alexandria. Does anyone even live there?
You Hilltop just hang a banner. Is stupid. Yeah.
Yeah, man. There's like a trap house a couple blocks away from us. Me and Jim are going to hang four pips on it because, yeah.
And at least that's anyone even used.
Right. Yeah, it's an ongoing concern.
Right.
He could just hang up their banner in any abandoned building for that matter. What's the point of doing that? And why arrest Oceanside when they did zero wrong? Well, it's not about right or wrong. This is about what Lance can get away with. Lance can talk about the shady stuff that was going on in Hilltop, quote unquote, and smear Alexandria and Oceanside with that same brush.
Plus, yeah. I love how they use one banner to signify it on Alexandria, but then they waste two full banners on Hilltop. Like it doesn't have an estate anymore. It doesn't have any blacksmiths. It doesn't have any populace. It doesn't have any populace.
No
They're
farms.
Protecting no farms. Those were burned forever ago. No trucks. Those were all blown up.
No.
It's got nothing. This is an empty, barren piece of land now that he's putting his flag in. I don't understand it. Why is that a big deal? Alexandria, sure. It has a half working windmill. It's got people still living there, as best I can tell.
And like 95% cold rolled steel walls still standing.
Sure.
Like they're not the Lincoln logs that they just got shoved in the ground. They're probably ground rotting 10 years in. You could just push them over.
Right. Yeah.
Also, the calculation of going to the press by Eugene and company seems wrong. Wouldn't they want Mercer on board first? Doesn't might make right in this case? This is... I don't know. This seems like a fundamental misunderstanding of how authoritarian governments work. You know, if you could take down Hitler in 1942, if you just got in, you know, the right headline in the right newspaper in Berlin, like it just just bring him all down. Right. Like, no, because number one, it would never, ever, ever be printed.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're like, that's it, because I don't, like, again, are they print? Is this like a zine? Is this an officially thing?
I feel like it is, yeah.
Because if it's a zine, then it's like there's going to be a whole bunch of society that doesn't even see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to be dealing with the quote-unquote dregs of society, probably the ones that are already on the out, the people that are already kind of agitated. They're not going to be well-connected. They're not going to have a lot of money. They're not going to have a lot of power. It's going to be challenging unless you can get the majority of the people, you know, that are not the elite on your side. And the elite are going to do their damnedest to control access to that information.
I mean, that's the thing. So, you have to have a moment of disruption, right? It needs to be either such a big groundswell from people who don't have power in the individual sense, to you know, aggregate that their collective power and disrupt the lives of the people who make these rules, who run this government. Or you have to get the people who support this government, who do have power and wealth, to turn on the leader of the government, right? Like, if you don't have one of those two things, nothing is going to change. They'll just look at it and it will continue status quo.
Right. Yeah.
And I do think that the show is going to come back and say, well, this didn't have any effect, right? Like, that's the smart way to go. Like, okay, these characters are a little naive and stupid, but the exception there should be Connie, who might know a thing or two about ousting, you know, congressional members with her work. She might know a thing or two about that, having done it before, to this woman's father.
As a smart journalist, realize that, like, this is not a 21st century cities newspaper on public. This is more akin to, like, reporting in Rwanda or old Eastern Bloc Soviet countries, where the free press is something that is more of an idea or a manipulated mouthpiece than it is like a true free press. And like the fact that she doesn't get, like, they know enough to know that should be silly to think that, but yet they're still thinking that. But
yeah.
Moving on to Karen S. It says, I always love your honest coverage of The Walking Dead, even though the truth hurts for a show that I love. Part of the reason for all these flaws is because AMC continues to work against its own show. Aaron has mentioned how Angela Kang must be so frustrated with all of AMC's limitations. I found this interview between Kang and The Insider shows just how many obstacles were in her way, not the least of all the spinoff announcements. It's unfortunate the creators have to run up against the studio. It's a disservice to the cast, the crew, and the fans alike. And man, I felt very vindicated reading this review. If you go on The Insider, this was from April 10th, 2022 by Christian Acuna. Angela Kang is saying a lot without saying a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find this exact quote. Here's one. The interviewer says, do you wish the Maggie Negan spinoff, Isle of the Dead, wasn't maybe announced until after the 11B finale? Were you surprised it was announced? I asked because I thought it took a little bit out of the big fight between Maggie and Leah. It felt like the stakes would have been higher for Maggie's safety if it weren't announced. And Kang says, yeah, you know, I really can't comment on the movements of these kinds of things. I definitely, when we were writing the season and filming it, I did not know it was going to be announced. So maybe things would have been handled a little differently, but you know, that's above my pay grade.
That's Scott Gimple's pay grade. Yeah.
That's a pretty scathing response from a showrunner. Uh-huh. The fact that she did not know while she was writing the season 11B that they were going to do this spinoff that would make this climax silly. And you also wonder, what are they doing right now to promote the new material that's going to be undermining the work she does this season?
Mm-hmm.
And you also got to wonder, what effect does these decisions have on the writer's room?
I mean, there had to be some level of knowledge there, right? Because what if they write a scene where Maggie dies? What if they write a scene where Negan dies? Did the executives, like, get final script approval here and say, no, you can't do this because XYZ?
Didn't that already happen on this show where, like, who took over after Darabont? Mazzara wanted to kill
Lauren Cohen.
Andrea.
Andrea, yeah, the other Lauren.
Yeah.
Chip, what's her name?
I don't, it's Andrea. They didn't want her killed off, and he said, fuck you, I'm killing her off. And like,
and she was pissed about it, and everyone was, yeah.
Everyone is pissed about it. And there's tons of stories like that where the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. So, like, I imagine if she had killed Maggie, like, that's a great question. Would suits come to the set and, like, you can't do that? You're going to have her miraculously survive.
They would have to. Yeah. But would they get wind of it? Like, that's the thing. I mean, there has to be somebody talking to somebody here, and
I don't know overseeing this,
because yeah, there has to be. There has to be. Scott Gimple's that guy, right? Scott Gimple gets the scripts every week of every show that's going on in the Walking Dead universe, make sure it lines up with the executive's idea of what to do with the series, or what to do with the franchise, rather.
Yeah.
Got to.
Yeah, and she's also in this interview talks about, like, you know, we've heard this from many showrunners, the COVID restrictions on both the pre-production and the writing process and the filming gives a lot of challenges because you just can't have big casts and big shots and big screens together. So
sure.
It seems like all the stuff that everybody's dealing with, and then AMC executives on top of it all. So that's kind of depressing, because I do like that. This makes me feel a lot better about the Kang era, because I do think without meddling and without this crazy spinoffs, we probably would have gotten a lot more interesting. Like the Kang, if left her own devices, would have kept on doing the smart character work and, you know, making a turkey dinner out of a couple of frozen chicken wings. So Karen says, just another question. How much responsibility do the actors have in this whole spinoff thing? Is it fair to say that Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Lauren Cohen, Melissa McBride, Norman Reedus could have refused to be in those spinoffs in order to preserve the artistic integrity of the flagship show? Or is this a contract thing? I don't know why they'd want to remain in these roles and not challenge themselves with other acting parts. But then again, they enjoy that cast and crew, and I think they're only obligated to 6 episodes. Anyway, keep up the good work. Appreciate your coverage.
Yeah, Hollywood's a tough place. You're going to turn down a guaranteed paycheck like this on a franchise that you're already 11 seasons into. What, for a good career move?
To work with your friends that you've been with for 10 years. And like at this point, like typecasting, if you're worried about that, that ship has sailed.
I mean, like, Lauren Cohen tried this, right? Lauren Cohen tried to jump ship, and she got hired onto a show that had like one season and was canceled. And then came back to this. So, like, who's knocking on Daryl Dixon's door? Who's knocking on Maggie's door to say, hey, come over to this other thing. We've got a better offer for you. If it's not there, why wouldn't
the highest profile thing that Lauren Cohen done before at the same time as this was she played a voice on Destiny, the video game.
Okay, like, sure.
You know, there's not. And like I said, the typecasting, if you're worried about like, oh, that's the Walking Dead guy, the Walking Dead, that's happened. Like
right,
you've been doing this for a decade. The type has been cast. So, yeah. And I just think that like, it's a fool's errand to expect people to turn down money. Like if someone came at, you know, and said, hey, here's $20 million. You and Jim split it. We're going to whore up Bolt move. Maybe it's not the best creative decision to let some corporate entity take over Bald Move and do whatever they want with it. But on the other hand, me and my wife and my kid don't have to worry about life for the rest of the duration.
Right.
And when you get offers like this and this hellhole that we live in, you kind of got to take them or you're a fool, I think. So like, I don't ever blame the people that are taking money that's on tables, especially when they're in this position. You mentioned the artistic integrity of that ship sold back when they fired Frank Darabont.
Yeah. Yeah.
The artistic integrity of this show was sold out in season two. So like it's not the actor's responsibility to protect that. It's the studio that owns the property, you know, to not dilute and destroy. And they're just not interested in doing that. So you can't care more about the thing than the people making the ultimate decisions do. At least I don't think you can. All right, Yusuf is up. I said, here's some scattered thoughts I want to share. I feel like this section has a bit of rehashed themes from previous plots. The season 5 arrival at Alexandria and the adjustment to a new society seem to carry the vibe into this season. You even got the lady politician leading the community, and she has a shitty flamboyant son that we're meant to hate again. Also, the actor playing Lance Hornsby is pretty much...
Wait, was Reg the shitty flamboyant son analog here? Did she have a son?
No, no, no. She had a son.
Yeah, it
was all. No, he didn't. He wrecked a big rig into the wall or the like. Yeah, no, he was.
Oh, right. Brought
down.
We
hated that fucker.
Yeah. Okay.
didn't he let one of the guys like the Steve Urkel type get eaten too?
God, I totally forgot about him.
Yeah. Lance Hornsby is pretty much copying how David Morrissey played the governor, except Morrissey managed to convey more expressions. This guy just does the sleazy, friendly, psychopath, menacing. I mean, it definitely rhymes. I don't think it's exact control C, control V, because Alexandria is to the Commonwealth the way, like, a village looks like to a city, you know? Like, sure. The Alexandria's like finding a medieval village that's still intact, and the Commonwealth is like finding, you know, like I said, a modern city. So I think it's a little bit different. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Also, $100 says one of the spinoff shows or both are decoys. I know I should understand at this point the AMC is the dumbest marketing team since Joseph Stalin, but I still cannot believe that paid professionals decided to tell us that the four major characters on a show are most definitely going to survive the final season or flagship show. I can't. The world cannot be this simple. So I'm putting $100 down, one or both. These shows are not happening. Most likely the Maggie Negan one. Yeah. The deal you'd have to make to have actors talk about a series that they have no intent. I mean, it can be done.
Sure.
But
that's
I
Andy
just can't
Kaufman
imagine.
Shit, right? That's like.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's long con stuff that I don't know. And does that just destroy any goodwill, any faith in AMC and their marketing? That like. I guess, look, it's a final hurrah for the show. Maybe they do it and just spend all the fucking goodwill chips they've accumulated throughout 11 seasons, which are not many. That's not a big stack. I don't know. I don't see it.
The ironic thing is I think this would build some goodwill back. If, like, they said
really?
That, like, we actually did this just to increase the shock that somebody died or, like, but it's still, it's playing with the audience when you don't have to. Because if you...
Right.
Because in absence of these things, you would just be like, I would have been actually scared that Maggie was going to die last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And if she died, then I'd start thinking, oh my God, they're really going to kill some big fucking names in this last. And like, you know, is Daryl going to be safe? Is Carol going to? Because there are characters that I care about and I don't want to see die. Like Judith, Carol, Daryl. Those are like the flagships of the, I don't actually care about Maggie or Negan. I think one or both of them dying would be pretty cool from a storytelling perspective.
Sure.
But
how is this not just
taking
like
most of them off the table?
But this is a marketing Glenn under the dumpster, right? Like this is, yeah, it's the switcheroo that everybody fucking hated about Glenn. Just in meta form, advertising form. I don't.
Yeah.
I think they'd be insane to do that.
You guys mentioned how you thought season 9 and most of 10 were the best since season 1. A big, bad, bold, bald statement. I would say that any season with Rick Grimes was better than any season without, but then I'd be lying because season 8 sucked ass. I mean, that's the worst season.
Yeah.
Season 8 is where no one gave a fuck anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that season 9 is better than 8 and 7B, and I'd equate them in quality to season 6, but beyond that, I cannot in good conscience put them over anything 1 through 5. No matter how the writing improves the show, I remember it somehow always relied on the strength of the actor's performance. And to me, Andrew Lincoln nailed every scene he was in, no matter how silly the writing was. And he was easily the only main cast member on the show that ever managed to do that. I mean, Andrew Lincoln's great. He is single-handedly carried. Well, not single-handedly. I think the main cast is pretty good. And I don't know. Because I feel like maybe, I think season 1's the best season of the show, even mm-hmm. though it did have an uneven episode or two. I almost feel like season 3 might have been the real glory years, because they got over the season 2 unevenness of splitting a director, and they had the governor material, which is pretty strong. But like, honestly, you started seeing the drag in your feet, the dragging out material, the cost saving in terms of sets and actors, and like the rot was there, and I think 9 and 10 were genuinely better than all that. Because through the most of the Whispers arc, I never felt like, oh, they're just stalling.
Yeah.
They're just stalling.
I remember continually saying, boy, they've really done a lot, you know? And I can't believe this is going to last another half season or whatever. So, yeah.
Question, can Gabriel still see out of his bad eye? My wife noticed he was using it to look through the gun crosshair in the gunfight with the Commonwealth troops in episode 16. No! No!
That gunfight is an atrocity. It's terrible. I watched it again last night. It's worse than I remembered.
Here I'm noticing the crooked bayonets, and I don't notice the blind guy looking at the scope. Oh, Jesus.
Daryl's idea of cover is to put his arm up and brace for impact. That's his idea of cover. It's ridiculous. I didn't notice the eye thing, but that is just one more piece of shit on that piece of shit Sunday.
I imagine Seth Gillum, the actor, must be able to see out, because he's not that. Like, if that, because like if you just made that an opaque eyepiece, like that would solve the problem, man. Just make it the way he can't see out. Then he won't do something stupid like sight down with his bad eye.
Yeah.
Or maybe he does that just to troll the production, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm going to, this is like,
well, shit, if the POWs
are crossed their fingers and the publicity stills because their jailers don't understand the nuance of, yeah.
Yeah. Didn't we just watch a show that did that not too long ago?
What are you talking about? Maybe.
What was it? Like, somebody got married. Oh, the Truman Show. Truman Show. Laura Linney does that in their wedding photos, crosses her fingers on this television show. Yeah,
she's under duress, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, Yusuf says, thanks for your awesome coverage. One last round to go. One last time in the breach, boys and girls. Randy says, you've mentioned Crooked Bayonets several times this season, but I've watched and rewatched those scenes, and I do not know what the heck you're seeing. To me, the bayonets look wider than normal, and half the top part of the bayonets curved down to the point, but as far as them being affixed to the rifles at 45-degree angles, I just don't see it. Maybe take a screenshot. Okay, I'm exaggerating when I'm saying a 45-degree angle. Yeah. It's more of like, look at the barrel. It's bent like a 15-to-20-degree angle off of true. Do I want to take the time to screenshot this? I almost do, because I feel like every episode I watch, I would come over with two or three shots of them. But, like, it's not that important to me. But it is. I just can't unsee it. Just look at the barrel. Look at the bayonet. Imagine the bayonet's supposed to follow the barrel exactly with zero D. And there's just so many of them are off. So I might. I'll think about it, Randy. Vincent. You guys are awesome, and thank you for what you do. You seem to be struggling with the Milton family, though. Think of them like the Kennedys. There's several in politics. It was stated that Pamela's father was president. The congressman Milton that Connie got in trouble with was another Milton, Pamela's uncle. Ah.
Okay.
Assuming the Milton on the coin was Pamela's father, then it seems best to think of him as JFK. The uncle, probably Ted Kennedy, I guess. Or Bobby, like, because he wasn't on the president's the staff? So, like, it's one of those Bobby Kennedy things. The Kennedys are arguably the closest thing the U.S. has to royalty, so it makes sense that Milton, a stand-in for the Kennedys, would create a society with them as an almost monarch-type role that people would recognize and allow, even flock to them in times of great fear. I hope it's useful. No, it actually is, because I was having a hard time figuring out what the hell was going on with the Miltons. But if you're saying it's a dynasty type family where they had the you know, two uncles and a cousin and, you know, fathers, and it's multi-generational, it makes a lot more sense. I thought it was this one dude and she's trying to turn it into a post-apocalyptic dynasty. Hmm. So thanks, Vincent. Allie says, half season in retrospect, what the hell is up with the Commonwealth's processing system? Remember how some people were dragged away screaming something along the lines of, no, no, not again. Is it just a job placement option for pre-fall actors in the Commonwealth to terrorize potential admissions? Was any of it real? Did our crew lose no sleep about the other people getting tortured in a warehouse 5 miles away? Okay. I agree with part of this because I've been banging the drum that they telegraphed the inherent evilness of the Commonwealth way too soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in the interview process.
But I also think you're supposed to understand that these people that are screaming, oh no, not again, are probably on that list, and they are being used in slave labor and a coca plant, or they're being used to fetch money out of safe houses that the rich people know about, or they're being used in some kind of other thing that, like, this is part of the punishment system. That, like, washing out of the Commonwealth, there's a process for that. But, like, why would you let the inductees? I don't know. It's like, yeah, nobody stops and said, like, man, the induction system in this is crazy. But then again, they come from a facility where a crazy guy who talks on his wife on a phone would ask you three questions that was a pass fail to get in. You know, like, how many people have you killed? How many zombies have you killed? Why? All right, he sounds like a good fella. Let him on in. You know, like that's the intake process for Alexander. So fuck. They got some crazy guy with a salt and pepper beard and some kind of fruit seller for 5, 6, 7 years. That's justice. Like, what the? Yeah, everyone's just kind of making shit up as you go along, I guess.
For sure. Yeah.
They're not just rounding up everyone they find and putting them against a wall and shooting them. So, like, they can work with this system. I don't know. Aaron and Father Gabriel have been absolutely killing it this season. Do you think they're squaring up for the next big spinoff? Send them to Texas. Let's do a Western. The Aaron and Gabriel show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could see it. Why not? Why not? Why not suck all the marrow out of this thing?
Call it Mason Hatson. And Mason Hatson line, and they can go south. South again. I don't know.
Thank you for your ongoing coverage of the Shambling Show. For all its good and ills, it's a podcast. It's been a consistent highlight in the 11-year slog. Also, my first hook into the BMU, Bald Move Universe, so no complaints here.
Nice.
You know what? I have enjoyed my time on The Walking Dead a hell of a lot more than I'm not. Mm-hmm. Like, even if it's not, my use is not the intended intended usage of the show, it's been a fun punching bag for sure. Finally, Craig from Middletown, Delaware. Hey guys, great work on your podcast. I wanted to mention one of my biggest issues outside of the character arcs, plot lines, etc., which is the characters' clothes. Are we meant to believe that the Commonwealth has worked clothes companies that are able to make designer clothes? I'm sorry, even if you found warehouses full of stuff, wouldn't you have run through it in 10 years plus? I know that's the smallest issue, but it always cracks me up.
I don't know. Feel like there's a lot of fucking clothes on the planet between all the thrift stores and all the department stores.
Because, like, 1 out of 100 people survived this thing, right?
Right. That's the thing. We have enough clothing to clothe the entire populace of America 10 times over, I'm sure. Just sitting in warehouses and stores.
Not to mention, like, every house you go into is going to have 2, 3, maybe more closets full of clothes.
Yeah. I think clothes that's an easy problem to solve. The clothes don't go bad. They can sit on shelves for decades, and, you know, you might have to wear some bell bottoms, but
like, sewing is a very old hobby of humanity, and fabric is not that hard to manufacture. And if you talk about, like, just ready-made clothes, like, think about how many fucking Michaels and, like, Joanne fabrics that just have like, if you went there and you just yards and yards and yards of all kinds of fabric and sewing supplies and needles and, you know, like, will Pamela Milton have a sweatshop of 100 seamstresses that make her cocktail dresses? Abso-fucking-lutely.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not even sweatshop. It's probably, like, one of those Phantom Thread type of well-run things because she wants them to do their best work. So, like, the clothes stuff doesn't bother me because it's not like making steel. Making steel is hard in a zombie apocalypse. You need tons of power, tons of heat, but making clothes, you need a loom. I think they invented those like 2,000 years ago. So
I guess the only thing that could bother me about clothes is if one character wears a particular piece of clothing for a decade in this environment, like Rick wearing his cop shirt for
Or Daryl with his vest and his wings.
And they're doing a pretty good job aging that stuff. I feel like
that's true. Daryl's gone through a couple wings now.
Yeah, his wings have fallen off. He's got new ones. I mean, maybe a vest wears out. Maybe it doesn't. But, like, yeah, they're doing a pretty good job there. I have to give them credit where credit's due. I think they've taken that stuff into account.
Mm. Well, that's going to put a cork on this season 11B of The Walking Dead. Stay tuned for season 11C sometime out late this summer or early fall. If you want to stay in touch with Bald Move, you can go to twitter.com/baldmove. We usually do a pretty good job at keeping people abreast of what we're doing there. You also might want to check out our forums, forums.baldmove.com, to stay connected to the community. We have a Discord at discord.baldmove.com, and our website, baldmove.com. Literally everything that we make. You can also, like, if you like our pulpy stuff, there's a Bald Move pulp feed that you can make sure you get all of our zombie space superhero type stuff. And if you like
season one of The Walking Dead, we've got Bald Move Prestige, where we try to cover the stuff that doesn't have those things. You know, it's just about admin and people making meth and trailers, stuff like that. So, like I said, I just ran off a bunch of stuff we're doing in the coming months. If you want to follow us, we just shouted it out. Thank you for being close to the finish line. One last sprint. Let's really get the knees up and pumping. Let's get the heart rate up. Let's finish this whole fucking thing strong. We'll see you back on the other side of summer. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.